Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. Today is Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe. A lot of gardeners get itchy fingers this time of year, waiting for it to finally be time to get their hands dirty. That time has come. Today, spring tasks in the perennial garden. And Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, is here to be our guide. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
And I do know we get impatient waiting for our opportunities. It's not time to get out and plant the vegetable garden yet. We still have some waiting to do. But what can we do with our perennials?
So this time of year, a lot of us are looking at our perennial border and are really interested in kind of cleaning it up. But especially in the last few years, there's been a lot of talk about when do we clean up the perennial garden? Because if we can leave that material there longer, it can help support beneficial insects and those kinds of things. And so that seems to be one of the biggest questions I get related to the perennial garden this time of year is, when can I start cleaning up?
So now?
It's probably okay now. So okay. The typical kind of guideline that we can use is about 50 degrees. When temperatures start to be 50 degrees, especially for several days in a row, many of those insects that might have been overwintering in the hollow stems or the leaf litter have moved on. And even if you're a little concerned about it, if you remove that material and place it somewhere else in your yard, they can emerge from the material in that location potentially too.
All right, so pile it up and get to work in the garden. So we're cleaning up. Mm-hmm. Are already starting to see perennials poke their noses above the ground?
Oh, yes. And many of them are kind of the usual suspects. We definitely have some perennials like catmint and bleeding heart that pop up early. Daylily often pops up kind of early in the spring. It's fairly common. And those have definitely emerged, at least here in central Iowa. And so this is a great time to kind of get in there before they get too large and kind of spruce things up. You don't have to pull every last bit of material out of the perennial garden. In fact, if you're okay with the informal look of it, you really can just pull it aside from the crown, maybe cut down some stuff. One of the big reasons we do this is it does help growth of the perennial, but it also just makes it look nicer. And so kind of cutting down all those old leaves and either removing them or pushing them to the side to act as an informal mulch is a really nice task to do when the plants are still pretty small. And that's about this time of year across the state.
And those plants are small, they are growing, mm-hmm. but now we know where they are. We know that they're alive. Does that mean this is a good time to maybe do some division?
Yes, I love this time of year for this particular task because you can see where the plant is pretty easily, but it's not so big, so the foliage isn't in the way when we're trying to cut apart the pieces or dig it out of the ground. And then when we replant those pieces, we aren't left with this like one-sided or lopsided looking plant the rest of the growing season because it can grow out and be kind of that nice uniform look. So hosta is just starting to poke those little points up out of the ground and many of our perennials are just starting to green up, especially if they're in a kind of a warm location like I have a perennial border on the south side of my house that is definitely a little further along than the one on the north side. And those perennials are all up a little bit. And this is a really nice time to get in there, dig up that whole clump, divide it into pieces, make sure that each piece has some living parts to it. Large perennials like hosta can sometimes have the middle die out. And so you don't obviously want to try to transplant the dead middle of the plant. And then get them in the ground as quickly as you can, right away if possible. If you have to hold them over in a container or something like that, you can do that. But the faster you can replant them, the less stressful it is on the perennial.
How do you know when a plant is big enough and strong enough for division?
Most plants that can be divided, if you can get subsequent pieces that have at least 3 growing points on them, then that's a decent sized transplant. And of course, bigger is going to have less stress and you're going to have a larger plant in them, but kind of 3, maybe 5, depending on how vigorous the perennial is. That's about kind of the line I use. So if I have this plant that has 15, 20, 25 growing points, I know I can get in there and divide that into at least 3 pieces that are nice sized.
When you make those divisions, are you, in plants that bloom, are you sacrificing blooms for this year?
It depends on the perennial. So some spring blooming perennials in particular, that stress of division can prevent bloom for that year. Things like bearded iris, peony. And so for those plants, we sometimes recommend, we often recommend transplanting them in early fall, late summer, early fall instead. That can help kind of avoid losing the bloom for that year. But most of our summer blooming perennials, many of them will still bloom. And if they don't, they'll bloom the next year.
I know a lot of gardeners sort of have their magic formula when they dig a hole. What do they want to put in the hole as far as fertilization and that kind of thing? What's your magic formula? I'm sure it's the best one.
Yeah, you know, most perennials don't need a ton of fertilizer.
Okay.
So especially in many of our Iowa soils, they tend to be a little bit more fertile, and perennials don't have a high fertilizer requirement in general. Now, there are a few that do love a little bit of fertilizer. Chrysanthemums, daylilies, they respond very nicely to fertilizer. And so most of the time we don't need to fertilize, especially if we're planting something new from the garden center. It already has fertilizer with it from the garden center in that soil that's in the container. But if we wanted to provide a little bit of fertilizer, just an all-purpose fertilizer, no more than 1 pound per 1,000 square feet, which is an odd kind of measurement. It usually ends up being just like a little spoonful and incorporating it into the top kind of layer of soil is all that's really needed. And now is a great time to do that, just as the perennials are emerging. That's a great time to utilize that fertilizer. Another fertilizer you can use is compost, and that's not quite as doesn't have as high amount of nutrients in it, but that's perfect for a lot of perennials.
When you divide or transplant something this time of year, do you need to kind of baby it for a little while after you make that move as far as watering?
Yeah, you do want to watch it a little bit more closely. You have definitely, even if you think you've gotten a lot of the root system, you haven't gotten all of it. And it did put that root system under quite a bit of stress. And especially if conditions are dry, that means that those recently divided or transplanted perennials are more likely to see stress from dry conditions or something like that. And so you will want to check frequently, especially through the spring and early summer. If the soil is dry, water. And if it's not, then wait. And as the season goes along, you probably won't have to check nearly as often. But that first year in particular, you definitely want to keep an eye on them and water when necessary.
Now, we're doing this right now because the plants are of a size that makes it convenient. Is there an end to the window? When do we know that, okay, we've got to wait till fall?
Yeah, it's when temperatures start getting really warm. So this is a stressful event for a plant to dig up its whole root system. And if you layer on top of that really warm temperatures, that can make it even more so. So if we can, it's usually kind of early to mid-summer, early summer for me, definitely. First part of June is when I would stop doing a lot of this work. And actually, if I can't get it done before the middle of May, I'm often waiting until just after Labor Day to do the transplanting or the dividing.
All right. Now, it's also a good time of year to buy lots of bags of mulch.
Yeah.
tell me some rules of thumb as far as mulching the perennial garden.
So we tend to aim for about 2 to 4 inches of like a shredded bark mulch or something like that. And over time, of course, the mulch decomposes. That's exactly what we want it to do. And so if you have thin or bare areas, those are more likely to see things like weeds. And so this is a great time to add mulch because you don't have all the foliage of the perennials in the way. It's easier to work in the garden. Just make sure you don't cover up the crowns of the perennials with that mulch. And I think we've probably passed this window across much of the state now, but you can mulch a little too early. And what happens is it keeps the soil from warming as quickly. Mm. And then you'll see slower emergence of your perennials. And honestly, this time of year, I want my stuff to come up. I'm ready to see some green. So I don't want to see that necessarily. So you can do it a little too early. Also, if you do it too early, you don't know where the perennial crowns are. You run the risk of burying them accidentally, which would be hard on those plants too.
You are not a fan of landscaping cloth.
No, I'm not. I find it very difficult to garden in because anytime I go to dig and divide something, and most perennials do benefit from dividing. It keeps them from the center dying out. It keeps them blooming better. It keeps them a more manageable size. And I get more plants out of it, which is great. If I have landscape fabric down, it's just in the way. I just don't love it. And a lot of folks like the idea of putting down a weed barrier.
Right.
But especially if we're using organic mulch, but even if we're not, if we're using rock or something like that, there will be enough small particulate matter and other things that build up on top of that mat to allow for weeds to grow. And I think anybody who's seen this in a landscape for more than a handful of years has found weeds on
right.
top of the landscape.
It may look great for a couple of years,
yeah.
but then
yeah.
you're going to be frustrated because you're going to be pulling it out.
Exactly. And most of that material is not decomposable. It's plastic. And so it's there forever, which is another thing that I don't love.
A lot of us love to go shopping this time of year mm-hmm. as well. Do you have some advice for looking at perennials at the garden center?
Yeah, this is a great time of year for shopping. This is one of the best parts about spring in the garden is buying new plants. And the biggest piece of advice I have, apart from, you know, making sure that you're buying plants that are well suited for the location that you intend to plant them, you know, they have the right amount of light and the right kind of soil conditions and all of those things, is to make sure that you're not buying only things that look good in the garden center right now. Because when we do that, we tend to have a beautiful spring garden and then summer and fall look a little less so. And so making a special effort, because you're naturally going to be drawn to all the things that look good this time of year in the garden center that are blooming this time of year, to make a conceited effort to get in there and buy things that are not necessarily spring blooming or that are explicitly fall, like asters and some of those things, can make a nice
All right.
Think
big long difference.
Term.
And
yes.
in 30 seconds, when we do bring that home from the garden center, is there a transition period that we need to help harden that plant off before we plant it?
If it was grown in a greenhouse and it's still relatively early in the growing season, if we do want to get it out there, we would want to harden it off. So we would want to kind of gradually introduce it to outdoor temperatures. By the end of April, first part of May, most of those perennials are already hardened off at the garden center and they're ready to go.
All right. Erin Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. For more gardening information and tips, you can subscribe to our Garden Variety newsletter. Find out more at iowapublicradio.org/garden. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today is Horticulture Day. With me, Erin Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And Mark Vitosh is with us as well, DNR Forester. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
And you are welcome to join the conversation. You can give us a call with your questions at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can send email questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Mark, I just drove from Iowa City to Des Moines this morning. It feels to me like central Iowa is a little further ahead as far as spring bloom and things going on. But I know you travel all over southeastern Iowa. What are you seeing?
The crab apples are starting to come. The pears have been going. So things are coming. And I can smell something in the woods. So you know what I mean?
Well, I saw a post yesterday online from Lee County. It was a nice morel mushroom haul. Are you ready to go out and start looking?
So I've told you this before, but over the last 5 to 10 years, I've synchronized with my crab apple in the back. And when it gets pretty significant bloom on it, I wait. I used to go out and just go and be disappointed. And then I kind of noticed when I started finding the little grays that my crabapple was in bloom. So on Wednesday, I saw 22 blooms. I counted every single one. So And yesterday it looked like they're really starting to come. And I would say with the temperatures, I'm thinking I might have to take a walk on Sunday.
All right. I like to think that maybe you're in sync with your crabapple in even more ways. Like this is a very appealing idea to me.
Don't tell Dr. Iles I'm in sync with my crabapple.
And I mean, Aaron, of course, you spend a lot of time in Ames, which is just 30 miles north of Des Moines. But it's kind of amazing the difference even just 30 miles can make in the spring.
Yes, it's true. I've noticed that, too, just driving between, say, Des Moines and Ames. There is definitely a difference on certain days, especially this time of year when we see such dramatic changes.
Yeah. Well, my bluebells at my house, my Virginia bluebells, are already coming into bloom, but I'm going up to Cedar Falls this weekend. Usually they're like a week behind us, and we love to go to our favorite place to see bluebells, which is the Katoski Green Belt in Waterloo. But I bet we're a little bit early this year. But patience. Mm-hmm. Let's get to some questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We've got a couple lines open for you right now. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Rick in Ames writes, we have a large sycamore that lost some branches in the derecho a few years ago. A couple of years after the storm, the sycamore produced a new sprout on the side of the trunk about 15 inches below where a large branch had been. And unfortunately, at least 15 inches... Oh, wait, I'm sorry, that's feet. About 15 feet below where the large branch had been, and unfortunately, at least 15 feet above the ground, I went up the ladder and removed this new branch, only to see it reappear the following year. I wouldn't so much mind a new branch, but it's growing straight up the side of the trunk, so I'm afraid it would be a weak crotch in the tree. Plus, it's on the side of the tree that's next to the house. The internet told me that sycamores do this and that it's a phenomenon called epicormic branching. I also saw a source that recommended applying some chemical after removing the branch, but it didn't say what this chemical or hormone might be. Is there, in fact, some way to treat the trunk to discourage the tree from this persistent branching? Mark?
So this basically just tells us that with the loss of some of those branches, there are these hidden buds and these epicormic shoots, as he mentioned, that are hidden, and once you start to lose a percentage of the tree, that plant responds trying to put on new foliage and new branches. And sometimes they can be weakly attached. And I would advise him just to get used to, and he can wait a year or two between, but he may just want to keep pruning it off. There are some materials out there that can be used, growth hormones that can be sprayed. How well they work is questionable. But it's probably going to continue to be weakly attached. So it's something he's probably going to have to continue. We saw after the derecho, I saw a lot what I call chia trees. And they lost so much foliage. These epicormic shoots came, and they just were this fuzz of branches up and down shoots and stuff. And when we have large trees in the forest and other trees fall around them and open up and more sunlight gets into those trunks, those epicormic buds break. So it's just a pretty common characteristic. So I think it's something that he's probably just going to have to deal with on a ongoing basis. But be
so
careful.
Get a good, sturdy ladder.
Yes, I was just going to say, be careful on the ladder.
Right?
Or get a pole pruner that you can use to cut off. But if he cuts it off when it's smaller, it's going to be easier. The other thing he may see, even if he treats that area, because they may not sprout from that wound anymore, but if it's because of the lack of foliage, he'll probably get other sprouts in other locations. So it's probably because of the damage. It's just something that he might have to deal with.
All right. Here's a question from Valerie. She says, neither of my forsythia shrubs really bloomed this year. Do you know why, Aaron? Do you know why? She says they have a lot of leaf buds. One is in full sun and the other is in full sun in the spring.
Yeah, forsythia is really prone to winter damage to the flower buds here in Iowa. So it's not uncommon to see, especially the upper portion of the plant, without flowers on it because they were damaged by the cold. And
right.
I definitely
so we
saw
had that,
that
warm
year.
Period in the winter, and then it got cold again, and that's what happened.
And sometimes you can even see a line in the shrubs because the flower buds that were protected by a layer of snow were not killed by the cold temperatures, and the ones above were. And I definitely saw that up in Ames. There was a whole row of them that was just a straight line across where it was blooming below and not above. Mm. And it's because of cold damage. It's one of the things we deal with forsythia. It's just one of the things we have to do.
All right. Lisa in West Branch wants to know if it's safe to uncover her strawberries.
Yes, with an asterisk. what I would say is it probably is at this point, especially if you're seeing growth, but I would pull that mulch material off to the side into the rows so that if we do get a cold snap, you can put the mulch back on. Our goal with the mulch is to protect the flower buds. And so we want to get it off so that that growth can continue, can grow and be healthy. But if it gets cold, we're going to need to protect them again.
All right. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Rich is on the line in Ankeny. Hi, Rich.
Hello. How are you today?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have a couple of patches in my backyard where the lady that lived before us planted beautiful flowers that come up every year. But those patches are also filled with these terrible burrs that my dogs keep getting all over them. And last year we tried to dig them out, and they're back again this year. I'm just wondering what I can do about getting rid of the burrs and keeping the flowers.
Yeah. So this may be, there's a couple of different plants that have seed like this. Virginia stick seed is one of them that comes to mind. It reproduces abundantly by seed. And so if you can keep the plants down so that they're not producing seed, that will help. So that would be cutting back or pulling them out. But every time you pull something out, you're going to pull up new seed in the seed bank that can germinate. You could potentially, since this is a perennial garden, you could potentially use a pre-emergent herbicide and put that down. And that would, what that does is disrupts the germination of that seed and kills it. It doesn't, once the seed is germinated, it's not very effective. But if you can get it down before they germinate, it can help reduce the amount that you might have to pull out. This is going to be an ongoing project for a while. It's sometimes hard to get this stuff under control, but persistence will make a huge difference.
Right. And being able to identify the plant and knowing exactly what you want to get rid of
before
the seeds appear is a really good thing.
And
right?
So a Virginia stick seed is the thing that I'm thinking of. And so if you can look up pictures of what the seedling of that looks like, that will help too if you can get in there early.
What are other possibilities that it might be?
Do you want to describe the burrs, Rich? Maybe that would help.
Yeah, so we have, I'm beginning to think this is it. It's a very tall stalk and many, many, many tiny little burrs.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like that. So that's probably where I would start is with that plant.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Hey, Charity, keep up the good work.
Oh, thanks a lot, Rich. You have a great day. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jean in Beaverdale writes, our home is surrounded by wonderful oaks in various stages of life. What is the best method to protect the home from these termites and carpenter ants? Is there a deterrent, either a chemical or natural product that can be used around the perimeter of the home that would deter the insects from the foundation? Aaron, you want to take that?
Sure. I mean, if you're worried, especially about termites, this is where you bring an exterminator in. And there are absolutely treatments that they can provide that can protect your home. They're usually bait stations and those kinds of things. And it's certainly a wise thing to do for your home. And it's probably termites that I would be more worried about than carpenter ants. But of course, either could potentially be a challenge.
Right. You want to add anything, Mark?
Well, if they do have carpenter ants, I would be looking at the trees to see if I have any indications of decay, because usually they're going to nest in decay areas. They're not going to kill the tree. But if I have decay, then I may have concerns with the tree itself. So if having carpenter ants show up, I want to take a closer look at some of those trees to make sure I don't have some decay issues that might be a concern.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your question. 866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jan writes, last year, my lilies of the valley got an infestation on the underside of the leaves. It looked like millions of exclamation points. It didn't seem to harm the plants, but they did die back a little early. Is there anything I can apply now to prevent this? And if not, what can I apply if it comes back when the plants are up, and how do I get it on the underside of the leaves?
So sometimes you'll see this could be kind of a damage from dry conditions. So you're seeing kind of dieback of the leaf. There are some potential foliar diseases that can cause things like that, but it's hard to know exactly which one that is without, it's pretty hard to identify something like that without getting somebody to run a test on it, basically. Lily of the Valley is a pretty tough plant. And so I would not be inclined to spray any kind of fungicide or anything like that preventatively unless I knew for sure that's what was going on here. Regular watering can help prevent damage that might come from dry conditions. If you see it again this year, I would consider sending in a sample to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic, and the extension office, your local extension office, can help you get connected to them. It's not going to take the patch of Lily of the Valley out this year for sure. It's a pretty tough plant. So just keep an eye on it and kind of go from there.
All right. Michael writes, I have seen dwarf chinquapin oak recommended for small spaces for houses in town, 6 by 12 by 15 feet or occasionally 20. Do you agree, and are they okay with Johnson County's alkaline soil? Are they readily available, especially ones that were grown in colder areas? Mark, that's a pretty specific question.
They're not probably readily available just because they're not very common. I can actually tell you I've been in a lot of woods, and I have not seen a native population of it. I know it's out there, and I know we have it. Believe it or not, I actually planted one in my front yard last year. Somebody had a source that I got and actually planted it, and I've been watching it the last couple of weeks, and I think it actually survived the winter. The interesting thing about chinquapin oak is it's pretty tolerant to alkaline soils. Where we usually find chinquapin oak is on rocky kind of outcrop areas. So if we have a higher alkaline soil, it's going to be one that's actually going to have a chance. It's just, I would check with some of the local nurseries. There actually is a nursery over by Granger, Native Trees and Shrubs. You could check with them. You can look online to see what they have, but they deal with native species. But I wouldn't be afraid to, if you can find a source, to try it. I would tell him I could give him some acorns, but it might be another 20 or 30 years before I have any.
It's a long-range promise.
Yes, yes, yes. If I'm still around, I'd be more than welcome to share them. But chinquapin is pretty tolerable to those kind of conditions. It's just going to be a matter of, and I think they're going to be, the dwarf is going to grow really slow. So I'm using this as kind of just an added plant. It was an opportunity. I lost a big ash tree. I've got some other trees growing, but I had a little space, so I tried to, so I put it in.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Karen is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Karen.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I purchased a home last spring that had many lilacs, flowering quince, shrubbery right at the foundation of the house that were very overgrown. The only place you could appreciate flowers was from second story windows. And I cut them to the ground, and I don't want them that close to the house. I'd rather have low growing things like ferns and Lily of the Valley. How do I eliminate them? They've all come back, you know, they're all sprouting again.
Yeah, so a shrub that size is probably going to be hard to dig out. If you can physically manage to dig it out, that's an option. Otherwise, you're going to cut and treat with a herbicide. So Something like Roundup or glyphosate can work really well. There are also some that are sold as kind of brush killers. What's nice about cut and treat for stump herbicide applications is that you do not have as much risk of getting overspray or getting non-target plants. And so the thing to keep in mind, though, is that even though you cut them last fall, you can't treat the stumps now. It's something that you have to treat right after the cut. And so you would have to recut some of those stems. You're probably getting some new growth, and so you could cut that new growth and treat it. Really established plants, especially pretty tenacious stuff like flowering quince or lilac, will take more than one application. That's going to take a while. So if you can't physically dig them out, that's where I would go next.
I know some people like the chain and pull it out, yank it out with a truck method. Oh, Aaron looks sick.
Well, that's a pretty dangerous. There's a lot of potential of hurting yourself or property doing that. And so I don't recommend it. It's better to dig it out kind of with a shovel and stuff than to try to yank it out. You have run the risk of the chain snapping. And I mean, there's a lot of possible problems with that.
All right. Consider ourselves warned.
Can I give a small warning?
Sure. Yeah.
So if she's going to use brush killers, I would avoid any chemical that has picloram in it, which is Tordon, because that can be a soil sterilant, and that would cause issues with trying to get other things established or stuff that she's leaving. It can actually leach out of the roots of the plant that's treated and cause damage. So I'd be really looking at the label of whatever she decides to use if she uses a herbicide.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester, Aaron Style, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. You can join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. Today is Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe, and I'm here with Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester, and Aaron Style, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. We'd love to hear from you with your questions. The number to call, 866-780-9100. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Ron is on the line next in Trenton, Missouri. Hi, Ron.
Thank you. Disclosure. FDR died on my mom's 16th birthday. I'm in north central Missouri, similar climate to Keokuk and Burlington. How soon should I take all the mulch off of the Canna rhizomes I left in the soil last fall? And how soon should I plant the ones I stored in the basement? Also, planting seeds of black walnut, persimmon, pawpaws, asparagus, and rhubarb rhizomes, and any other veggie seeds. Yesterday, I finally mailed my tax form, so now I can plant veggies.
Sounds like you have a pretty busy spring plan.
Yeah. I'm going to let Mark answer the tree seed questions, but for the cannas, if you're noticing that the soil temperatures have been pretty warm, you can pull the mulch off. That'll help the soils warm a little bit faster. I probably would wait just a little bit to plant cannas out in the garden. The cool soil temperatures are going to really make them be slow to get started. But as soon as things warm up, they grow like gangbusters. So there's not a ton of advantage of getting them out in the garden early. You can start them indoors in a container, and that can help kind of get things started. But if it's too cold, the soil's too cold, they're just going to sit anyway. And so usually I wait until end of April, first part of May, sometimes the middle of May before I'm putting that kind of more tropical stuff out in the garden. Asparagus, rhubarb, if you have bare root things, you can plant that stuff now.
All right, onto the trees, Mark.
Tree seeds in ground now.
All right, short answer.
Well, if hopefully Ron already cold stratified them, which most seeds need a period of usually 60 to 90 days, or at least through the winter, of cold stratification. So if you had them somewhere cold and they went through their cold stratification, I'd get them in the ground as soon as you can start digging and go from there. I mean, some are going to take longer anyway, but you should be able to get them in the ground at any time as soon as you can dig.
All right, Ron, thanks so much for the call. Next up, Renita in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Renita.
Hi, Charity, Aaron and Mark. I kind of heard Aaron saying not to use the truck to pull something out. I've got huge yucca plant. I have a huge yucca plant, and I've tried to kill it a few times, and I think it's going away, and it's like, it's unkillable.
Yes. I've had this experience.
And I just wondered what I can do besides pulling it out with having my son-in-law pull it out with the truck or something.
Yeah, as much as you can get out and dig out, you can also treat it with a herbicide if that's something you're willing to do. Otherwise, it's just being persistent. I have dug out yucca in the past. I thought I had all of it, and 2 years later, something popped up. And so I just dug that little piece out when I saw it. It will take some persistence because those big roots are pretty resilient. And even if you use a herbicide, it'll probably take more than one application, but it's going to be persistence.
Okay. Well, will it kill anything around it? Like if I used Roundup on it after I dug everything out and put it right in the hole, will it kill anything else around it?
Or applying Roundup to the soil or anything like that is not an effective way to use a herbicide like that. It needs to be applied to green growing tissue. So you'll want to wait to see what comes back and then treat that.
Oh, well, it's huge. It's always there. So, okay, great. Well, hey, thank you, and you all have a good weekend.
Thank you so much for the call, Renita. And Aaron, just to remind people, I mean, you can be very, very careful about how you would use glyphosate. Mm-hmm. You cut it, and you can paint it right there on the stem.
Yes, and you can also apply it, of course, to green growing tissue. One of the nice things about glyphosate in particular is that it is very short-lived in the soil, which is why a soil application doesn't really work at all. But that's one of the things we like about it, because it's not a really long reentry time. It doesn't travel through the soil. That's part of what makes it so universally used.
Right, right. But be careful.
Yes.
All right. Javier is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Javier.
Hello. Good morning, Charity. How are you? Happy Friday.
Good. Oh, thank you. What's your question today?
Aaron, Mark, my family and I moved to Des Moines about 24 months ago. And in the property, in your humble home, we have two pear trees. I've been told that they're pear trees. They're mature. They're well over 10 years. They're about 10 feet tall. And they have this white flower that comes out just about this time of the year. And the first, when we first moved into the house, these two trees have flowers, very beautiful, both of them. And then last year, I noticed that only one of them flowered really well around this time. The other one took a while to flower. When it finally did flower, it wasn't as many flowers, and it wasn't as many leaves. This year is almost the same. And the only thing I can think of is that I dug some bushes around it when we first moved in, and I'm thinking that maybe I hurt the root. I probably caused some root damage. That's my theory. I don't know if that's the case, and if so, what can I do?
I think that theory is very possible, Javier, depending on how much root damage you may have caused. The other thing before you threw that out, I was thinking one thing, if they've only maybe been in the ground for not a super long time, I would look at the stems of the tree, and if they look like a telephone pole going in the ground, especially the one that's declining, I would pull the soil away a little bit from the trunk to see if you might have any stem girdling roots, which are roots that will actually grow around the trunk and start to girdle it, especially if you're seeing some dieback and some problems like that. The other thing you may want to watch for, depending on the type of pear, you can see it on regular pears or ornamental, is there is a disease called fire blight, but you'll see what you call shepherd's crooks, that you'll actually see these kind of black shoots. If you're not seeing any of that, I would be thinking that your root damage or maybe some stem girdling roots. As far as if you cause damage with your digging, there's not a lot you can do in that case. I would avoid doing any more. The only thing you could probably do is, if we do get into dry periods, is make sure that particular tree maybe gets a little bit of supplemental water. But other than that, if there was root damage, there's fertilization and stuff like that really isn't going to benefit.
It's not going to benefit. Okay. Well, I'll just keep an eye on it. And then I have another pear tree and a apple tree that I'm about to plant, and we'll see where that goes. So thank you very much for your help. You have a blessed day.
Thanks a lot for the call, Javier. 866-780-9100 is the number. Nick is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Nick.
Good morning. Question for Aaron. When can I start spraying for leaf spot on iris?
So that's usually a preemptive thing. I think it's about when the leaves are about 4 to 5 inches tall. But you'll want to check the label on the product. It will usually tell you the timing. It'll either be related to time, or it's usually more often related to the growth stage. And so preemptive use of a fungicide to help with that is a good idea if you know you've had the issues in the past. It's not something I would do just randomly, but if you've been having issues year after year, it's usually kind of early before you see the problems that you want to apply it.
All right, Nick, thanks for the call. Bonnie's up next in Carlisle. Hi, Bonnie.
Hello.
What's your question?
I have a huge magnolia. It's probably 50 years old. We've been in the house for 40 years. And I think the winter got all the flower buds, but I'm not sure about the leaves. Am I going to lose this tree?
Yeah, give it some time, Bonnie. Usually with leaves and stuff, you may get a little bit of bud death, but usually those buds aren't at the same stage as the flowers. So I would give it some time. I'm not over... Are you seeing... Well... I think you have time, and I think you're probably going to be okay. I all you can do is watch, but it's very common to obviously lose the blossoms, but usually it's got to be pretty severe, and the leaves have to be actually out before you see a lot of significant damage on leaves.
Bonnie, thanks for the call, and good luck. Does she have a... So watch until when? What do you think, Mark?
Oh, you know... I would say mid-May. I mean, if she doesn't start seeing leaves in the next month or so, she may have issues. But you wouldn't think she'd... What do you think, Aaron? I doubt that there's probably going to be much leaf damage.
No, I would be very surprised if she saw damage on such an established tree like that. I mean, long-term damage on such an established tree like that.
There's always exceptions, but I would give it a good month. But I would think with the weather coming and stuff, she should start to see some leaves within the next few weeks.
All right, good news, Bonnie. Thanks a lot for the call.
Try to stay positive.
Yep. Anna in Iowa City says, is Iowa still in drought? Where can I go to check drought conditions? I was watering my mature trees with a bucket last summer.
There's actually, if she Googles drought monitor Iowa, you'll actually get a map, and it's usually updated every couple days. And it'll actually show you on there last week, early April, we were still, like in Johnson County, most of Johnson County was still, but I believe I was out of the state last week, and I know in this area we got some pretty good rains. But if you Google drought monitor, you can actually get an update map of showing where we're at.
All right. You can also find a gathering of older people and just ask them, because, you know, this is what we talk about.
Well,
and La Nina could be coming and could get even drier this summer. Who knows?
And it depends where you're at. I have a local grower that I work with a lot, and he got 3 inches last week down near Kelowna. And so you may talk to someone else 10 miles away, and they didn't get anything. So that's kind of being in Iowa too. So
it's true. It's true. And you know, I'm in the Iowa City area, and it actually got genuinely muddy really for the first time all spring. So that was, I thought that was pretty fun, even though I have some dirty dogs. Mark, Bill in Coralville wants to know if you know the individual who keeps track of champion trees, and maybe for people who aren't familiar with the Champion Tree Program, you can tell us just a little bit about it.
It's actually called the, in Iowa, it's called the Big Tree Program. And it's a program through the DNR that we used to be fairly heavily involved. We still are involved, but because of budget cuts and other things, we've been using some volunteers. And we have one particular volunteer that does a lot of work for us. But what I would tell Bill to do is to actually go to iowadnr.gov, then find our forestry site, and then Google Big Trees on there. And it actually has the application that people can turn in if they actually think they might have a big tree. And there's actually a list that they continue try to update on a fairly regular basis. This volunteer works very hard, travels all over when he has time, looks at a lot of different trees. But it's based on three different measurements, height, spread, and circumference of the trunk. And then there's a formula that's used to come up with a point system. And then you basically have your champion big tree. And a lot of times they'll have a 1, a 2, and a 3 because they can be pretty close. But on that application or that sheet, it actually tells you how to measure. That will not be an official measurement. The volunteer usually will come out on trees that look like they have a chance and then try to verify those. The only thing I can tell you is patience, patience, patience. He works very hard. There's a lot of trees in the state. Everyone thinks they have the biggest, and I appreciate that. But it's when you have volunteers, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah. It's a cool program, though.
Yes.
Let's squeeze in a couple more phone calls. Jim is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Jim.
Well, hi. I have a quick question, I hope. A tree question.
Okay.
I have a white oak in my yard that, I mean, it's a gorgeous specimen, and every year it keeps its leaves all winter long and sheds them about this time of year every year. I've kind of documented it with photographs for, you know, every year from. What's up with that?
That's a great question, Jim. So oak trees have a juvenile characteristic. When they're really young, they will do that. They will hold their leaves and hold them to the very end. They don't senesce very well. Now, as most get older, they kind of lose that. But you may just get species or varieties that, or an individual tree, depending on your growing conditions, your site, and stuff like that will just continue to hold. White oak is one generally that does not hold their leaves as they get older. But if when they do come out, the tree looks healthy and everything's okay, that's not necessarily an indication that something's wrong. But oaks in general can do that. There's another species called ironwood that does that also on a regular basis. But as long as that tree looks healthy through the summer and you're getting good growth, I wouldn't be concerned about it. But there is some uniqueness to that tree because generally white oaks don't do it as commonly as pin oak is one. Even as it gets older, it will hold its leaves kind of throughout. But as long as it looks good, I wouldn't be overly concerned.
All right, Jim, thanks for the call. And final question, Julie asks, if I divide surprise lily this spring, will they bloom this summer, Aaron?
Maybe not. The best time to do it is right after bloom.
All right, well, I'm going to squeeze in one more question then. Jim from Colo says that his asparagus is ahead of schedule. Does that mean he's going to have to stop harvesting earlier too?
Potentially. Usually, if you have a good established patch, if you get a little bit of early stalks, you probably are just okay to continue to harvest until the normal stop time.
All right. We are out of time. Aaron Stile, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Mark Vitosh, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News. Our producers are Caitlin Troutman, Samantha McIntosh, and Danny Gear. We had production assistance today from Kate Perez and Tony Sarabia. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a wonderful weekend.